Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International. It is May the 14th, and 2015, and today we're going to be talking about athlete transitions and when athletes retire or they go into a different sport or they change from, say, high school to college athletics. Different sports, what the kinds of things that they go through. Talk about the, you know, types of transitions athletes go through in their sports, and maybe you can share some of that with your experience too with your clients. And the two types of athlete transitions, ways that athletes might retire that we could talk about, you know, when they choose to or when they're forced to retire. And then how athletes make that decision to retire or transition into something else, and is the you know, how they, why they feel stressed, and how we can help. Oftentimes athletes are not well prepared to make that transition, and so how we can help them. That's a really big area where we can get into, or we can be of a real help to athletes, so we can, and then warning signs to look for in them if they're struggling, and then just, you know, finding out how we can reach out to those kinds of athletes. I think it's a huge area for PECI or Performing Edge Coaches, and to be able to help athletes make that kind of change, and what you can do. And I want to talk about what you can do as a PECI Performing Edge Coach to help athletes in that area, and how you can find out what their stress response pattern is, and then you know, tools to be able to help them for handling transitions, and also with transitions, you know, with athletes going from, say, high school to college sports, or college to professional sports, or professional sports into something else. And sometimes athletes want to just transition into being more of a competitive athlete in their age group as they get older, or they may want to transition from being a competitive athlete to a non-competitive athlete and just do their sport for fun. So there's all kinds of transitions that can go on, and athletes often have an identity crisis when they're going through that transition. So helping them to understand what's happening and how to make that transition better. So, can everyone hear me okay?
Yep.
Can you hear? Okay, good. How are you? Did you want to check in, Michelle? Are you with any progress or anything that you're doing now?
Oh, sure, Dr. Joanne. That's why I was late, actually. I've been playing telephone tag with this one woman, and I sent out a couple weeks ago, while I started every day just doing some direct marketing every day, sending out emails and so on, and this woman called me back from a high-performance club. And she's really keen in hiring me to coach her daughter, who's national level moguls, and work
skiing?
With the club. Pardon?
At moguls and skiing?
Yep, moguls and skiing. And, you know, she said, I'd like to pass your name on to the national level coach as well. And then she also is the program director for a high performance center that has about five different sports, and she said that she'd like me to meet with the team next week to discuss possibly even getting me on there on a regular basis.
Great.
So that
fantastic.
Was cool. Mm-hmm.
Getting you on a show or a...
No, like as a regular on the payroll to be at the club regularly.
Great.
Yeah.
Fantastic, yeah. Yeah, regular payroll sounds like the best possible situation. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's nice for the consistency, isn't it?
Yeah, and that you could be part of the team, be a sports psychology consultant, or what were you going to call yourself? What did she?
I call myself a sports psychology coach.
Coach, yeah, great.
It's funny, though, Dr. Joanne, it's they say you're a sports psychologist, and I say, no, I'm actually a sports psychology coach. They don't seem to hear the differentiation. It's quite shocking.
Yeah. Well, I guess for them it's just either, yeah, they just want the sports psychology part in there somehow.
Yeah, exactly. And then I have a kid competing in provincial qualifiers tonight in tennis. And I've only actually ever worked with him via FaceTime. We do all of our appointments that way. And I'm going to go and watch him play. So that'll be fun.
Uh-huh, yeah. And he's at national level, or what did you say?
Well, he's trying to get to nationals. This is the provincial qualifier this weekend. And so he has to make it through this and then get to provincials and then nationals. But he's not that optimistic that he'll make nationals this year, but probably the following year just because he's young in his category.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So congratulations on that. Yeah. So
thanks.
It's good that you've got a number of different sports, skiing and moguls and then tennis and of course, surfing that you're an expert at, too.
Well, the surfer I was working with, he just got a sponsorship with Oakley.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Is he, oh, so he's a professional?
Well, he's young. He's only 14, but, yeah, he's now sponsored. So I don't know, does that make him a professional?
Yeah, but getting sponsorship really helps, yeah.
Yeah.
Being able to
that's
wear
a good
cool
brand, too.
Yeah, good brand, good those sunglasses are expensive if you have to buy them yourself.
Yeah.
So good that he can get them. And if you can get any kind of testimonials from them and, you know, use those, that's great.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So you're the woman's going to pass your name on to the national level or to the national team sort of thing to, you know, with the to be a sports psychology coach for the, is it the national ski team?
Yeah, it's freestyle.
Uh-huh.
So they do aerials and moguls.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and skiing is my the sport I've coached for 10 years, ski racing, so I know skiing quite well.
Uh-huh.
So that I'm definitely in my comfort zone there.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah,
you know what's interesting? When I was talking to the lady at this high-performance club, she said, it's amazing the timing of your email because I have been, for the last couple months, trying to find a mental coach to work here at the club and work with my daughter. And she said, I can't find one in this area. It's been really tough. So you were saying that, I remember on a couple of months ago that the timing is very good for this stuff because people are getting interested in it and there's not always a supply of people who can do it.
Yeah, exactly. And
yeah,
that's great. Yeah, it's just there's a lot of athletic coaches out there, but not many sports psychology coaches.
Uh-huh.
Oftentimes with girls, they might want prefer a woman coach like yourself to work with as opposed to a male coach, and so that can work really well too. And then somebody who's has a lot of credibility and experience in that particular sport, you know, which you have, helps a lot as well. So That's really good. And if you can visualize that, I think everybody on the call just, visualize that there is a need for this type of thing, that people are, visualize people searching for you and looking for this type of service, and that there's, it's that supply-demand kind of thing. I think there's a lot of demand out there for our services and not as much supply. There's not enough trained sports psychology coaches, so you're in a perfect position kind of thing to capitalize on that. And it usually means if you're a specialist like we are, then you can, charge higher rates and kind of choose the fees that you want to charge as opposed to just, something like a McDonald's where there's one on, or Starbucks where there's one on every corner. So think of yourself as a specialist, like in the medical field, doctors who are say an orthopedic surgeon or a neurologist, they, you know, charge more than just the average doctor does. And so, yeah, that's great. So, okay, well, let's talk about our topic today of retiring athletes, and then you can feel free to jump in anytime when you've got if you have questions or examples of that, or any athletes you're working with. I think the interesting thing is that with this area of kind of talking about athlete identity really here, and career transitions or career retirement, you know, imagine this scenario that there's, you know, say you're working with I was working with a swimmer who, it was the last day of her college competition, NCAA competition for the senior year, and, you know, so she's finishing up with her college eligibility for being able to compete, and there's that rush of emotions and excitement and apprehension. You know, it just kind of hit her like really heavily. She's struggling with the emotions she felt for the team on the last day of competition, you know, the last day of in the last year of college, and, you know, feeling that at the same time, you know, feeling a kind of a twinge in her, you know, her whole body, knowing, and stomach, feeling that, you know, knowing her career is coming to an end, and at least can't compete, you know, swimming on that level at swimming in college. And so there's that, you know, a lot of thoughts going through her mind. What am I going to do now with all this time I have? You know, that's, I've been swimming for so many years, especially with swimmers, they swim like, you know, kind of sometimes 6 to 8 hours a day, and they're spending all their time in the pool or strength training or doing, you know, other cross training to prepare for the sport. And, you know, she was saying, I'm not ready to leave the team. The real world out there is scary, you know, having to sort of redo everything. It's just like that, boom, after that race, you know, her career is over. So that's the sort of thing where, you know, an example here, we're talking about someone, you know, retiring from a college team. But there's many other kinds of examples of people that have to leave because of injury or because they feel their time is finished. You know, the thing is, the important thing for us to realize is that, well, my experience and research suggests that athletes are poorly prepared for their retirement from competition, and they might face really considerable difficulties in coping with those changes, the really significant life changes that come at the end of their sports careers and their sports identity, because their whole identity is tied up with, you know, being an athlete. And so the important thing is that as performing edge coaches, we can be really effective in assisting these athletes to you know, re-engage in life and find new meaning and find a new, you know, new purpose after their sport. By, you know, we could help them realize that the skills they need to be successful in other areas of their life they've already acquired many of those skills through their involvement in sports. You know, skills like leadership and cooperation and competition and, you know, tenacity, all those things. I've found it with kids, especially, you know, working with high school kids and college kids, that they're in the process of acquiring all of these skills that they need for to be successful in the rest of life. That stick-to-itiveness, you know, teamwork, working through problems, problem solving, dedication, all those things. You need those qualities to be able to be successful in life, and it's just a matter of them helping athletes to realize the qualities that they do have now and then finding a specific way to apply those in other, you know, developing other roles in their lives. And so I think, you know, when we work with these athletes, you know, we need to work with, you know, cognitive behavioral kinds of ideas, just like we do with their sport. You know, how do they think about this transition and be able to focus on the emotions that that they have that are associated with transitioning from their sport to something else, as well as emphasis on those, you know, finding out what are their transferable skills. And so, you know, that's really key here. I think a lot of athletes think, you know, what am I going to do after this? And, you know, we see kind of tragic examples sometimes. I think it was, you know, Mike Tyson or other, you know, boxers or, you know, can make millions and millions of dollars and then later on find out that their, you know, their lives are ruined, you know, because they're not doing anything or they're getting in trouble with the law or violence or other things because they just don't have a sense of purpose after they retire. And so we're getting involved with alcohol or drugs and because they have this depression that comes on. So I think we can be really valuable with working with athletes and creating an understanding that, you know, individuals actually have skills that are transferable into some other areas of life. They can find, you know, meaningful work doing something else. And so athletes need to come to understand that they have qualities that are of great value in other areas. And we can help them recognize the usefulness of their skills, the skills they've learned, and the knowledge that they've gained, and then, you know, apply that to other life contexts. So, you know, for instance, an example is one athlete I worked with at the Olympics, in the Vancouver Olympics, actually, Michelle, up in your area, you know, for the 2010 Olympics, he was, you know, in the luge, and he'd done four Olympic Games. He's 46 years old, and he, you know, that was going to be his last Olympics, and he wasn't hoping to win at all, but just wanting, he was just, his goal was just to finish, to compete in the Olympics, and that was, of course, that Olympics when the luge was, you know, national news, because that one luge rider, you know, died the day before the Olympics started with that horrible accident. And so he was—he had to be witness to that, which was really a tough thing to be, you know, to be when they were training the day before and be right up there on the slope when that happened. It was really tough. But then the next day he had to compete, and basically it was his last Olympics and last chance to compete in this area. But he was already—I was working with him beforehand. He was already a speaker, and already transferring and applying his skills in another area to become a professional speaker actually, you know, get paid as a speaker. So he had all along, as he'd been training for these Olympics, he was going to workshops, and I actually met him earlier at a speaker's workshop, you know, talking about how to tell your story, you know, whatever life story you have. And in his case, he had an incredible story with the luge, and how to transfer those skills from being an athlete, and those the tenacity, the dedication, the determination, the ability to handle adversity, and how to transfer all those skills into the area of business. So he realized that you know, people in business really need these skills as you know, in peak performance, and that in business oftentimes it's very competitive, just like in sports. There's a lot of transfer of skills. So he developed a speech that, you know, where he talked about his Olympic career and his sports abilities and sports experiences, and then talked about how how you have to be able to focus under pressure, and have you know, say the right things to yourself, and how to get through really tough times, and be able to handle fear. You know, going down the luge at 95 miles an hour, you know, this tiny little sled with no protection, is there's a huge fear factor there, and that can be that kind of story can be transferred and used in the business environment too. There's a lot of maybe it's not quite as intense, or it's different, you know, different scenarios in the business environment. But say a person making a presentation in business might have to, you know, give a talk for 1,000 people or for a few people that are very important people, CEOs, or and that kind of thing. And so there is a fear factor there, standing in front of those people, that, oh God, what if I look stupid? What if I mess up? What if I don't perform as well as I could when everyone's looking at me? What if I embarrass myself? Those are huge fears that people have. So he was able to use that experience of overcoming fear, doing the luge, and then talk to people in business about that and help them as a professional speaker. So that was one area. And now, of course, you know, because it comes down to a time with most athletes, their career is going to be over, or they need to transition into something else, or maybe doing their sport not as at the top level anymore. And so the more that you could help them as a coach, if you're working with someone like that, think about what are your transferable skills and what is it that you can also do, and think about the different roles. Help the athlete to figure out what other roles that they can have in their life, and how they can be useful to other people, and help them to kind of plan that along the way, so that they can adjust. Another example was a football player that I worked with was able to adjust to athletic retirement with relative ease, because he was aware that the skills and abilities he developed in football were equally valuable in the sales environment, and in business that he was able to work in. So after athletes have gained an increased knowledge of the importance of those transferable skills, then you want to increase their awareness of what particular skills they have, their own skills, and how they can transfer them into something else. For instance, other athlete examples, Stacy Jagiela, the Olympic pole vaulter, you know, puts on pole vault clinics now specifically. So she is able, some athletes, a lot of them can stay in their own sport, but put on clinics or give talks within the sport themselves. Some want to go into business. Misty Hyman, same thing, does swim clinics. And other athletes might want to become, stay within the sport to help other athletes, become an athletic coach within their sport or other sports. Some other athletes might want to be a personal trainer or a massage therapist. Some want to go into the sports medical profession to help other athletes. A lot of them want to be chiropractors. I know here in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, there's a Palmer Chiropractic College that is mostly athletes, actually, that are transitioning into becoming a chiropractor to help other people, athletes and the general population, to stay healthy. So it's a really great way for athletes can make that transition into to helping others. Some, I know one athlete became, a lot of athletes become orthopedic surgeons if they have a medical background or able to go to medical school. That way they can, they're working on the body and they have that knowledge, and they can talk to other athletes as a fellow athlete. So it's able to attract more athletes into their practice. Other examples, possibilities you could offer, just help an athlete to brainstorm other things that they could do, like become a sports writer if they like to write, be an author, write a book, be a sports commentator, even locally, you know, on a radio station or a TV station, or, of course, you know, do what we're doing, become a sports psychology coach or performing edge coach to work on the mental aspects of their sport the way they have. So there's many different ways that athletes can kind of transfer their skills. And I think the key is that our identities really affect the way we carry ourselves through our day-to-day interactions. And so, you know, at the sport, sport is something that we do, but oftentimes, even more than something we do, it defines who we are. And so the athletes that only have one kind of an exclusive role, they think, I am an athlete, I'm a professional athlete, or I'm a serious athlete. If that's all, that the only role that they see themselves in, then they tend to have more of a problem with retirement or transitions, because they haven't thought of themselves in any other role yet. And so, whereas athletes who do have other roles, maybe they're also a student in school, or they are, working in a job, a clinic or something, or an athlete who is a spouse or a parent and has to look after their kids, or someone who's a coach has another role, then they usually are better at making that transition, because they have different roles to fall back on, and their sport is not the only way that they define themselves. Because at the end of the day, it's the traits and the qualities that we possess that really make up who we are, you know, as an individual. And the athletic identity can be tricky, because it affects each person in a psychological way, a social way, and as far as our actions and behaviors as well. And so psychologically, if we can learning to handle the ups and downs of success, and pushing through pain. Those are like common examples of things we learn in sports. Socially, we learn how to be a teammate, how to work with the team, how to interact with others, how to be competitive and cooperative. That helps us, gain the skills as we grow up, because we're going to need to learn use those skills in the social environment and in work and families as well. And then behaviorally, athletes, for instance, they make choices, how to, with their schedules every day, what they're going to do with their time, as well as, their sleeping, how much they sleep, how much they eat. We all make choices as athletes with those kinds of things. And those decisions and those thoughts are, when you're an athlete, those are driven by the fact that you are an athlete. But when that comes to an end, we can really, a lot of times athletes don't know how to adapt to that change. And so we can really help them to adapt to the change. But I wanted to mention first, there's two ways that athletes transition from their sport. The first is through, making the choice themselves to retire. And the other is through, say, somewhat uncontrolled situation. Someone else makes that choice. So like a doctor or they've got an injury, a career-ending injury, that kind of thing. So the first ones, those who choose to leave from the sport on their own terms, they usually have much higher rates of psychological well-being, and they adjust a lot better. But the others that are forced to retire due to injury or other reasons, maybe it's not getting along with the management or family situations, all kinds of things might happen, or they're just not able to do their sport anymore, or maybe they just, let's say they were cut from, a professional player was cut from a team, because they couldn't perform as well, those athletes find more difficulty in making that transition to retirement. But whether it's, you know, the retirement's planned or unplanned, you know, those emotions come in of identity loss and, you know, it's really an identity crisis that they're going through. And so research indicates that individuals who identify, have that, they only identify as an athlete, that's their only role, they tend to struggle more with, how to adapt away from their sport. And especially if they haven't planned anything or if their retirement was unplanned or out of their control or all of a sudden they just have to stop, because of an accident or an injury, then, they're going through the emotions of grief or loss, just like if they lost a loved one or lost a job, that's common. And so losing, those kinds of athletes can experience, you're probably familiar with the five stages of grief and loss. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, first defined those in her book. And, the five stages are denial and anger and bargaining and depression and then acceptance. But we don't always go through all those stages or in that same order. Every athlete goes through the stages differently or may not even go through all of them. Some athletes have a lot of trouble and they end up stuck in, anger, say if they were cut from a team unjustifiably or didn't get the opportunities that they wanted, or they might be stuck in depression, just feeling like they don't have a sense of meaning or purpose. And so if you can help them to find that meaning, get involved with other groups, that's really important. And some athletes, we with those five stages, we often cycle back through them. We think, oh, okay, we're done. Went through the five stages of acceptance, now I'm finished. But oftentimes we go back through them again when other things come up. And so, just recognizing these emotions and helping the athlete to understand what's happening is really helpful in coping during this time of transition. And so if you can normalize that, help the athlete learn that these emotions are okay and they're perfectly normal to experience, even if someone's crying or upset, that's good. Crying is great if they can do that with you, and it's really help them understand that it's part of the healing process. Then the stress of trying to figure out what's going on it just becomes more manageable if you're the person that they can come to and talk to. So it's really important to help them, the athlete, have a support system and coping strategies in place. So I just wanted to give you a few ideas here about some ways to help the athlete build that support. One is to, help them to meet people outside their sport. So if you can, oftentimes athletes, their only connections or their only social realm is athletes on the team or within their sport. And so if they're suddenly cut from the team or have to retire, they feel really alone and isolated. So if you can help them to meet people outside their sport, maybe join, let's say if they're at a school, they're finishing school, they could join the alumni association of that school. Or if, if they're involved in a church or any kind of a group, they can get involved there. If they find out what other interests they have, maybe the athlete's also a musician, they could get involved in a music group or something, other organizations that they are interested in, then that can help them tremendously with, for instance, if someone's an Olympian, there's actually an association for retired Olympians so that they can bond with each other. So help them to find other people and outside the sport. And then help them to have a strong connection with friends and family. to talk about their future plans and goals. So if they can, you know, build those connections, ask them to, you know, call one friend each day to talk to them, or one friend every couple days. Get, you know, meet new friends and new groups, as well as connect with their older friends. Maybe, you know, on Facebook, it's easy to connect with old high school friends. And I even got in touch with someone got in touch with me who was in my first grade class. Amazing. I hadn't talked to her in you know, ever since first grade. And she found me through Facebook, so people can now find them, other people through there or through LinkedIn. You can search on names and just connect with friends again to build that structure. Even if they're not local, just being able to talk with somebody by phone or Skype or FaceTime works really well. And then, yeah, as I mentioned, getting involved with other groups or clubs on a campus, or at the school, if they're involved at a school. If it's an adult, then help them find, you know, there's clubs for and associations and organizations for just about every sport. So if they can get involved with their sports clubs, maybe they can help if they can't do their sport. Let's say in running, for instance, I'm involved with a running group, women's racing group, and we do runs, but we also do volunteer work and help other people volunteer at races. So that's a great way for people to have a sense of meaning and give back to their sport. And they may want to, you know, start coaching other people too, and scheduling appointments with a performing edge coach is really important to have a safe place to talk about these things. So that's kind of helping an athlete to build their network or their support system. And then also, you know, I just want to talk about some of the strategies that you could do to help them with their with that transition. Helping them to remember that you know, emotions are okay, to feel the emotions. Allow yourself to go through emotions you're feeling, that athlete's feeling, rather than trying to suppress those thoughts. Because if you suppress them, often they become stronger than if you were just giving yourself time to have the emotions. If you don't, and if you try to suppress them, then often they come out in other ways, those feelings, like in through drinking or drugs or depression or anger or violence. They come out in different ways. But if you can help them to just process through those emotions and talk with you about them and just be a really good listener. And if you're working with parents too, like for instance, I was working with a client last night, a high school girl. And often her parents are here too, and they often would kind of try to suppress her emotions. Or let's say she was running in a race, and she's disappointed after the race, and the father would often say, you know, him say, "Here, don't be disappointed. You should not be disappointed after your race. You know, you should." When I was, you know, an athlete in college, I was always happy with my races. And I want you to be happy after your race. You know, and I would hear this going on and realize the daughter is really upset and saying, "Oh, I was disappointed." And what I did as a coach is in sports psychology is just to, well, first listen to the interaction back and forth, and then I said to the daughter that you have a right, everyone has a right to their emotions. You have, it's okay to be disappointed and to express that, and that's what you want to. And same thing if someone was retiring or getting close to a transition, to say it's okay to have those emotions for being disappointed or being upset or being scared, being afraid of what's going to happen, to express those, that's okay. And then and then we process them through. So I told the parent, so I told the child, it's your job to express the emotions, to just go through them and talk about them. It's perfectly fine. And then I told the parents there in that same session, it's your job to, I gave them an acronym, LAP. LAP, I just made that up on the spot, and LAP and L stands for listen. So parents need to listen first without judgment. Just listen to her feelings, the athlete's feelings. And A stands for acknowledge. Acknowledge the feelings so they could say, oh, okay, it sounds like you're disappointed. I hear that you're disappointed. I hear that you're upset. And to just be able to acknowledge that, to say, I'm here for you, you know, without judging, without evaluating. And then the P is for process, you know, process through those emotions. And maybe after the race, just to listen. And it may be later on, you know, say in the case of retirement, that might be the athlete's last race or something. And so later on after that, when they're going to breakfast or later on, be able to process through those emotions and say, so what are you, let's see the big picture, and what are you going through, and why are you feeling that way, and what can we do next, and let's look at the whole picture, look at what you've accomplished in your career here, and then how can we transfer that into something else. So processing through the emotions, and then P could also stand for putting performance in perspective. So listening to what the athlete is saying. So, and then just a couple other things I wanted to mention are, remembering, you tell your athlete, remember that your sport does not define who you are as a person. It's one part of your identity, but it's not your only identity. It's, you know, ask them, you know, who are you? I'll just say that again, remembering that your sport does not define who you are as a person. But, asking them, you know, what are your traits and qualities and what are your strengths? And that can be really good to help a person to kind of define who they are and what they do well. And they might say, well, I'm a good team leader. I'm a good communicator. I talk to people well, and I can handle, I'm resilient, I can handle things. And have them write those down, and write down all of their strengths as a person, and that can help them realize that those strengths are not only confined to just being an athlete, but those strengths can be transferred into other things that they do, whether it's within the sporting environment or something else. And then another thing to work on is just setting new goals. You know, whether it can be in their current environment, if they're at school or with a new group, maybe they're looking to go on for further education, for a master's degree or PhD, or maybe they're looking to do a new project or start a new job, or maybe do an internship with someone to learn, or doing a seminar, learning something new. So just having them set new goals of something that they can learn, maybe study something new, that can really help to, even if it's just a summer class or a community class or something just to get them involved to realize that they can keep learning. Sometimes they, if they're really an expert in their area, they can actually teach and be, teach at a college or teach at a club or teach or coach to help others. That can really give them a sense of value and meaning. So just one of the most important things you can do, too, is help the athlete to understand their identities, identities plural, so not just identity as an athlete, but their identity as, say, a student or an employer, an employee at a job. If they're an adult, maybe their role as their identity as a parent, as a spouse, or as a business owner. You know, they may have aspirations of wanting to start their own business in some way. So, just remembering if an athlete is struggling in this area with transitions, remind them there are support systems, and getting those support systems in place and providing them with resources and strategies to help with them cope with this transition. Help them to get more ready. The earlier the better, but any time is okay to start. And remind them that every athlete, this is normal transition. Every athlete no matter whether they're an Olympian or not, is going to transitions out of their athlete identity and into other identities that have tremendous value as well. So remind them that the athlete that you are not alone, and remember that your sport is something that you do and does not have to define who you are as a person. You can have many other ways to define yourself as a person. So, that's some of the content I wanted to give you. I have lots more on this topic, too, that we can go over. I just wanted to check in with you and see what questions you might have or experiences, and then we can do a sort of a part two on this on our next call on May 28th, too. But what kinds of comments or responses or questions do you have?
Oh, hi, Dr. Joanne. It's Michelle.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, I don't have any questions. It's great information. And I like what you said about Dr. Kubler-Ross. That was a good reminder.
Yeah, that idea with the five stages of grief. Yeah, we think of it as applying to a loss of, say, losing someone in your life, a death or something. But, yeah, those same emotions, those same stages are things that athletes go through, definitely. Yeah. Have you had any athletes that have gone through a transition or?
No, I'm trying to get off. I'm still working on getting the athlete. Maybe
yes,
in a couple of years I'll have this.
Yeah.
We're ahead of the game here. But
that's right.
We
right.
Have the information.
Yeah. But it's good to think about. The other thing is athletes that go from a transition from high school to college, if they're still in their sport, but they're kind of going through a loss of being like the top dog in high school. That often happens with people that, you know, they were a big fish in a small pond in high school, and they were the big person, the best athlete, and really looked up to and could win everything, and then all of a sudden they go to college and realize that, you know, everybody's the top dog there. The reason they got into college is because they were the best in their high school, and now they're just an average athlete or down at the bottom, and it's a real sense of loss there, a loss of being the star. So that's something to be aware of when athletes go from, say, high school to college. Or same thing from college to a professional sport where they're able to do something, having to get into a whole bigger playing field where they don't have the, they're not the the main person, and they have to learn this is a new identity for me. How do I fit in when I'm not the go-to person? Have to struggle again at the bottom of the pack to earn a reputation and to get to where I am, to get some kind of recognition here. Maybe the basketball player used to be the star, you know, playing all the time, and now he's on the bench. And, it's a whole different identity. Has to really work hard. Yeah. Alex, are you there too? I think I heard you, your laughter.
but I was agreeing with Michelle. I am kind of on the other spectrum of trying to find clients. Maybe I find a client who's trying to retire.
I'm excited for you, Michelle, that you got that good news. It's congratulations on that, getting that high performance club. They gave your name to a national level coach, you said, right, for skiing? Yeah, I think maybe she went on.
Hi, Dr. Joanne. Yeah, I was muted. Yep, that's correct.
Oh, yeah, that's great. I don't know if Alex, you were on the call during that time, but yeah, it's just good news, inspiring, and that you might, they want, talking about putting on the regular payroll, you said? So that would be great.
It's funny, I was just saying to a friend the other day how much I would like that, and I was specifically telling her what I would like for myself in that area, and I do believe that, you know, the conversation with yourself is a conversation with the universe, and then I got this call. It's just interesting.
That's great. Could you visualize, you know, if you were working with them then at the national level, you know, with freestyle, what you'd like to be doing or what your role would be and how you'd work with athletes?
Yeah, it was, I really want to be in a club where I could be like the consultant that would be there even just one afternoon a week, right, when the teams are coming in and they could come in and we could just have 10, 20-minute conversations together with the athletes, something that was just a consistent thing, that was just a regular gig, you know, as opposed to trying to, you know, it's a lot of work, right, in marketing and so on to get clients and to just be, have your face out there consistently and being exposed to all of these different athletes that are coming and going through the club, that exposure I think would be fantastic.
Yeah.
I agree.
Maybe give a talk to the to a group there is another possibility, I guess, at this high performance club, you called it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they do swimming, hockey, bat, all the racket sports, and it's provincial and national level athletes, which is perfect. Just
yeah.
what I want. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be great, and maybe you could be there and just like you say, once a week, and be able to talk with them about the. Be there to answer questions, you know, be like a resource, for them to talk about, you know, problems they might, places they might feel stuck, or, you know, maybe you could come up with some questions that they. That's a good way to a marketing kind of strategy too for all of you that. You know, think of what are the most common questions that you've been asked by athletes or common questions or problems that they are struggling with or challenges that they have. And if you can come up with a few and then send those to the person in charge there, then that might strike a chord with them and they realize, oh, yeah, you know, my athletes is having those kinds of issues, or maybe they're in a slump, or you could go through the Your Performing Edge book that you all have too and just kind of think of some topics in there and then turn them into a question, you know, what kinds of slumps are they going through, you know, the performance anxiety and worrying about their how handling pressure and those kinds of things, you know, real doubt, self-doubts and, confidence issues. Just as an example, just last night I was talking with one of my clients here who's a runner, but the same applies to every sport, and she was saying, asking herself, you know, comparing herself to last year and thinking she's not as good, thinking I'm a worse version of what I was last year. And so, you know, other things you could do, like, yeah, just a quotation like that, you know, kind of quote what your athletes have said before, some things like that. I can't, as she said to me last night, I don't view myself as the same runner as I was the year before. I can't run as aggressively. I can't imagine myself, being as good as I was last year. So those are problems that she was coming in with, and those are things that, you know, if you can come up with, like, little statements like that and then write them down, without the person's name, of course, and then... you know, send them to the coach or the person in charge there, anyone that you want to hire you, that oftentimes those really strike a chord, that they feel like, wow, those are, yeah, that sounds really familiar that I hear from athletes here that they really need help with. She was saying, I'm so much worse than I was last year. where I'm tentative at the start, and so I don't feel like I can keep up with the first pack of people. Those are, you know, the issues that athletes come up with, or the common complaints. And because that's what people will hire you for, is not necessarily just for new information, but they want you to solve their problems, right? So if you can come up with the problems that you hear, and just specific quotes like that are really good, that you, whenever you see a client, even if you don't have clients right now, just try to work with one for free for a few sessions and write down some of their quotes or some of their complaints and difficulties that they're having, then you can use those to market yourself and get more clients that way. And then what I did during that session is we talked about the different kinds of power words and positive things that she could say to herself to reframe that. I said, you know, because she said that her workouts are getting much better. So we wrote out, you know, just saying to yourself, my times are getting faster in my workouts. Things are moving forward for me. My running form is looking good. Her parent said to her, you look more like yourself in this race than the last one. So just, you know, making progress. I'm on the, she may not feel confident right now, but being able to say I'm on the path to confidence. I want to be more aggressive on the last lap. And then looking at the last race, what she did, I passed a lot of people. So looking at what did go right, kind of thing. Opportunities are present themselves in each situation, in each competition. Like sometimes you think, some athletes think, I'll never be as fast as so-and-so, as this other person. But oftentimes that other person, you know, they come to a race and they might have a bad day or not feel good, and that's an opportunity that presents itself. If you are ready when that happens, then you can, then that athlete can pass them. So, and then that whole idea of I can do it, you know, one of the quotes I often hear or problems is I can do it in the workout, I can't do it in the competition when it really counts. So, if you write that down and, you know, that's something that coaches or people realize, oh, yeah, I hear that from athletes a lot. They really need help with that. Then that's something that you can, something you can solve. Saying, with my client last night, for instance, I said, okay, so you're really good in the practice and the workouts. You really are aggressive in those, but you're not. But then she gets in the race and she has a whole different mindset. So I said, what if you could, you know, I actually put a helmet on, you know, just kind of like when you're a little kid, you say, let's put on our thinking caps. And I pantomimed, just putting on a thinking cap. And I said, so you got your practice mindset or your practice thinking cap on over here. And then you go to the race and you take it off, you got something totally different on. So what if you were to go to the race and actually put on your cap, just like you're in the workout, and or just like you're in practice, and so have that practice mindset when you're in the competition. And she thought that was really a good idea, if you could visualize that, actually not just the thought, but actually having a cap or a little helmet or an imaginary hat that you put on. That when you put that hat on, it gives you that feeling of, okay, I'm in practice now. I'm going to be aggressive. That mindset and carry it right into the race, then you can. It becomes more familiar. So and in the same way, you know, so you make the practice, the race feel more like the practice, and then when you're in practice, you can actually do that too. You imagine yourself, okay, I'm going to put on my race helmet, my race hat, and imagine myself in the race while I'm in practice here. So you kind of build that bridge between practice and the competition. So I just want to give you those kind of examples, yeah, to come up with a list of questions. Yeah, let's do that next time, too. If you can come up with some and I'll come up with some, we'll do that for our next call on May the 28th. You know, what are the common questions? And those could be used for marketing. So I was saying to Alex there, if Alex, are you still on the call, too? I don't know if he is on, but yeah, that we can do, you know, do our next call on, you know, on May 28th about, make it more specifically about marketing and yeah, how to get clients and how to keep clients and also how to build your credibility. So yeah, how's that sound?
Yeah, that sounds a good idea. I mean, maybe we can share what we do or we attempt to do or what we are at least struggling with or obstacles, and because one might, I may have my own obstacle, but maybe somebody else has a solution for this, and vice versa.
Exactly.
Or maybe I'm approaching one way, how to reach out to I don't know, athletic directors, and maybe that's not the the most effective way. There are other ways of doing that. So, anyways, just to brainstorm a little bit about everybody's success stories and stumbling stories and experiences, and hopefully we can learn from that so we can move forward.
Let's do that. Okay. So next time I come up with your questions and also just what works, what hasn't worked. Michelle, you've got some things that are obviously working for you, and I know Amy Haller's got is doing some really good things too with her marketing, and is really successful. And Alex, you can come up, you know, give a situation or something you're struggling with, and we can all pitch in and come up with some possible solutions and some different things to try here. Because I know that there's if you can keep visualizing like you did, like you said, Michelle, this is really good timing that there are, visualize there are people, there's so many people out there that need our services and they're searching for them. And so it's just a matter of showing them the value. There is, in terms of supply and demand, we're in a really good position that there's a lot of demand out there for sports psychology coaching and not enough supply of good quality coaches in this area, in mental training. And we just need to show them that you are trained and well and can deliver and can get, you know, get results kind of thing. Really quickly, and also, you know, just talking about the way that you offer services, like the different package deals you could offer, instead of just saying ongoing coaching, maybe say, you know, so much for one session or three sessions, that kind of thing, you know, different, getting creative about the ways that you could offer different things. Like, for instance, now I do, you know, say I want someone to pay for four sessions up front and do four sessions first. And then after that, just do one. They may want to just do one session at a time. And that's okay, too. I'm more flexible with the second month. And that way, if they don't want to, if they're not ready to pay for another four sessions, they could still just do, like, one session at a time kind of thing. And that way you're able to keep the client and you know, maybe they want to do at that point every 2 weeks instead of every 1 week. So, great. Okay. Well, anyone, other questions or comments? What was most helpful about today?
No, I think it was useful. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Alex. And Michelle, thanks for joining us. Okay, we'll talk to you on May the 28th, and I know there are other people on the call as well that are muted here, so thanks for joining us, and I'll have this replay up shortly, and send you the notes here, and we'll talk on 2 weeks, May 28th.
Great.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Okay, thanks, Michelle.
Okay, bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.